is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. And by Hancock Whitney, with more than 120 years of experience helping clients protect the financial future they deserve, even in these challenging times. Hancock Whitney, your dream, our mission. And by Shorten Associates, legal recruiters in Louisiana and Texas.
From our socially distanced virtual lunch table in Lafayette, we're out to lunch with Christian Mader, publisher and editor of The Current. It's business, Acadiana style.
Welcome to Out to Lunch. I'm Christian Mader. There's a silly proverb, those who can do and those who can't teach. I say it's silly because the best teachers I've had are those who can do and can teach. Skill is immensely valuable when you're teaching a craft or a trade or a sport. And teaching, in fact, is a pretty good product, especially when the subject is something that students can spend a lifetime learning and enjoying. Melissa Hill created a space for folks to do just that. Niche Creative Studio in Lake Charles is part craft shop, but all creative studio. A third-generation sewer, Melissa grew up crafting and carved out a side hustle making memory quilts while she worked in nonprofits. She launched Niche as a center for what she calls missional creativity, helping people find their own creative passions. Melissa launched Niche in 2014. Melissa Hill, welcome to Out to Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
My next guest, Savannah Vincent Thompson, accomplished her childhood mission pretty early. At 19, she was the first American to qualify for the Olympic trampoline finals and joined Team USA for the 2012 Olympic Games in London. Since then, she's made a living training the next generation of Olympians at her gym, Hangtime TNT. She offers tumbling, cheer, and gymnastics courses at two locations, one in Scott and one in Broussard. And somehow she squeezed in winning a national championship in 2018 before stepping back from Olympic competition to focus on her work. Savannah Vincent Thompson, welcome to Out to Lunch.
Thank you for having me.
Melissa, so crafting is, as the name of your studio implies, like a niche thing. I mean, you know, it's a thing that some people do, some people don't. You know, you might call it a hobby, you might call it a passion, right? But it's often a skill set that you find people would pass on within families, as is the case in your own, right? So I would think it'd be kind of intimidating for somebody who's like no experience with this whatsoever to walk into a store and, you know, pick up a piece of fabric or a ball of yarn and sort of get started. So do you find that the folks that come into Niche are folks that are already really into crafting, or are you finding folks that are sort of the crafting curious, like folks who don't really have a lot of experience and they're wanting to come in and get started?
Yeah, I find it's a good mix of both. So yes, I do think that a lot of times crafting does become generational. So, but then there are just people who are really curious about it and want to do something, but they're not exactly sure what type of crafting. There are so many different types of creative outlets out there. So we find that it's not even just for people to find their niche in whether they're a crafter or not a crafter, but I really do feel like everybody is creative in some form or fashion. You just may not know what your specific niche is. So we try to expose people to lots of different types of creative outlets. And so they can try things out. There is an intimidation factor. You go into a large corporate craft store, you have aisles and aisles of all different kinds of supplies and things, and you have no idea what they are or how they're supposed to be used. So the idea is that you can come and take a class and see if it is your niche. And it may or may not be. You may take a crochet class and decide, this is not fun at all. This is really stressful. And I don't have the hand-eye coordination for this. And this is not something I enjoy. So that's one thing off your list, and try something new. So you'll get into a cake decorating class and you may decide, wow, I really do like this. This is not stressful for me. This is a skill that I really enjoy doing. So the idea is to try to take some of that stress out that's naturally in there, because crafting is, in my opinion, not supposed to be stressful. I tell people when they come to our painting classes, if at any moment you're starting to feel that weight, that stress kind of coming on you, take a breath, maybe a sip of wine, whatever you need to do. And just remember that it's supposed to be fun. So whatever you need to do to kind of get back into that headspace to where you're enjoying the process, that's what it's all about.
So you've mentioned like cake decorating, you've mentioned painting, you've mentioned crocheting. I mean, like, that's a pretty broad spectrum of activities. And so it kind of raises a question in my mind, like, okay, so when we're talking about crafting, where's the line between what's crafting and what's culinary arts and crafting and visual arts and crafting and, you know, artisanship? I mean, how do you even begin to sort of say, like, this is crafting and that isn't?
Yeah, I think it's all just, it's a creative outlet, which is why we're niche creative studio and not necessarily niche craft studio. So I think that sometimes we give the word crafting and it kind of has in its mind, oh, that's just a hobby. That's just something, you know, where you're gluing something or doing a mixed medium sort of thing. But I really do feel like any form of creativity is an outlet for crafting and being, just sort of figuring out using your hands, using different materials, using your creative mind. I really do also believe that it's both left brain and right brain. So you're using logic. When we sew, we're looking at a pattern and there are processes and we are measuring and we are doing some exact and precise sort of things. But then we're also using the other part of our brain, which we're being creative in, what fabric should we use? What should go together? How do we put these, you know, pieces together to create a look? So it really is kind of all encompassing. So any of those visual outlets or art or creativity, I think all can be encompassed in that. And I really do think that no one is good at everything. So I own the space, but I coordinate these amazing, crafty, creative women who all have their own specific niche that they're great at and bring all those pieces together to form a studio. So I don't teach all of our crochet classes. I don't teach all the painting. I don't teach all the sewing. My niche is sewing. I enjoy that. I teach our kids classes. I like teaching the next generation on how to sew because I think it's becoming a little bit of a lost art. But I don't teach everything else. So I partner with other creative, in most cases, women at this point, and come alongside them and encourage them to share their love and passion for their particular niche with other people.
So Savannah, speaking of niches and being great at things, I mean, I would imagine, you know, kids come into your gym and it's got to be really exciting to learn from you and continue like the places you've been and being able to compete at that level. But it also strikes me that sets a really high bar, right? I could imagine like going to soccer camp and, you know, Diego Maradona or something was the guy that was coaching it and I'm thinking like, well, I mean, like that's the standard I got to reach. That seems pretty high. So do the kids that come into your gym, I mean, are they mostly folks that are looking to follow your path, right? Like to go into serious competition, or is it mostly kids that are sort of, again, casual about the idea? They're just sort of trying to figure out if this is something that they want to do.
So basically in our facility, we have a wide genre of programs for the kids to try out. So of course we definitely have competitive gymnastics, and that is my main focus with the kids. I'm the head coach of that program, and I try to share my passion as a competitor with my kids, and if they are interested in taking their journey in our facility that far, then they had that opportunity. But a majority of our kids, I would say 90% of the students that are here in our facility are here recreationally. They just love the idea of the sport. And myself and our coaches that we have here do an amazing job sharing our passions of the sport and the technique of what they need to learn. So we start them out as early as walking age all the way to 18 years old. So we have a different range of age groups that we're just sharing the love and passion of trampoline and tumbling and cheerleading. And of course, the way most places are, I cannot teach every course and every class. So I have an amazing group of coaches here that help also in that department as far as sharing their love and passion with our children. And so I have certain people that specialize only in our preschool area that teach the 3 to 5 year olds. And then I have coaches that teach anywhere from 5 to right at that teenage years. And of course, my passion is again, the competitive side. That is where my heart is. That is where I spent 16 years of my career and journey in the sport, in the competitive side. So, of course, I love the recreational side as well. And I get to go and see the kids start to find the love of the sport there. That's where it starts out. Very few kids come into the program day one and say, I want to compete. They have to learn to love the sport and learn what the sport is about before they can decide if they really want to make this something serious.
So the kind of, you know, something I've always kind of wondered, I mean, you mentioned like kids are coming in at walking age. Like, kids come in real young. I know in gymnastics, right, it's not uncommon for people to really get into this at a high level, or I should say like working really hard at it young. I mean, how do you guys determine, you know, at that age, a child has a real aptitude for this? Because like I have a 2.5-year-old, right? And I like to think, okay, well, he seems pretty like good at climbing things, but I'm not confident that over time, you know, he would make a great gymnast. So, I mean, how do you even begin to identify those kids that are going to separate themselves and move to, say, that competitive side?
So, of course, at 2.5, it's very difficult. I have an 18-month-old as well, and he loves to flip. He loves to jump. But I still cannot say that he's going to be a gymnast one day. I would love to see him venture into that, but it's very early to determine that. Usually around that 5 or 6-year-old mark, you start seeing the children that are really interested in the sport. And what I mean by that is not just interested in the idea. They basically eat, breathe, love gymnastics. That's all they think about. They are eager to learn and grow their skills, even at that young of an age. And it's not always just the most talented kids. For instance, I was not the most talented kid growing up in this sport, believe it or not. I had the passion and the determination, and I believe that's what got me as far as I have gotten in my journey. But you don't just look for the talented kids. You look for the kids that just genuinely love what they're doing. And if they're willing to meet you halfway and take the instruction and what you're trying to give them to help them grow, then that's how you can start to determine, like I said, around 5 or 6 years old. That's a little early, but you can still tell if they're wanting to pursue it long term.
I'm so fascinated the fact that you got to the level that you did. Do you find that like part of it is talent, but part of it is like there's some sort of mental thing that people who get to the level that you got to? I just don't feel like even talent is enough to accomplish what you've accomplished.
No, I would agree with you there. You know, first of all, thank you. I've spent a lot of many of my years training. So it's a huge accomplishment for myself just to get that far. But I definitely agree. I don't believe it is just talent. It definitely, there's much more into it. And, you know, I've seen many talented kids come through the program, or even kids that I've competed with through the years that were so much more talented than I was, but they just lacked the passion and the will to want to make themselves better and the work ethic. So a lot of that plays a huge factor. And of course, mentally, you have to be at a point where it's going to get tough. It's going to get hard and you're going to want to give up, but everybody wants to see you pursue that and keep pushing through. And sometimes it's more of a mental battle than it is ability or physical.
You're listening to Out to Lunch. I'm Christian Mader. I'm talking with Savannah Vincent Thompson of Hangtime TNT Gym and Melissa Hill of Niche Creative Studio. You know, Melissa, I know you said earlier that at the end of the day you feel like crafting needs to be something that brings you joy. Maybe it doesn't need to be stressful, but I mean, any skill that takes time to develop, right, is you're going to hit some wall where you're like, I can't get this right. I mean, do you find that folks like have to have a similar? I mean, I would imagine the determination levels are different. You're not necessarily putting your body through as much stress, right, as you might in becoming a professional athlete or a highly competitive one. But I mean, like, what are those sort of like, you know, crocheting barriers? Surely people have to come into this saying like, look, there are people who get really good at this and then people who, you know, they just do it for fun. I mean, is there kind of a separation of wheat and chaff in crafting?
Yeah, I mean, I really think so, because you'd be surprised. I think it just depends on the motivation of why someone wants to get into it. A lot of times people just need a stress reliever. They work, they have a job every day that's stressful, that they don't feel like they can be creative in. And at night, maybe even after the kids go to bed, they just need some sort of creative outlet. And so for them, if they get stressed with what they're doing, they're just going to put it up and go find a different outlet to be creative in or to find joy in. But you'd be surprised, a lot of people are trying to, especially with the pandemic and everything, they're getting into creating for a living. So where we teach a skill of sewing, I can't tell you how many people went home and started making masks and selling them because there was no manufacturing in place at the time at the early part of the pandemic. And so that became a business for them to be able to provide for their family. Maybe they got laid off or maybe the quarantine kind of shut down their business for the time being. So sometimes, yeah, they get into the either way. I think they should find joy in it. But the motivation, I think, behind the learning process either is going to be an outlet as just a side hobby, or if it's going to be a business, an income, there's going to be some stresses. Yes, with that, you've got clients to deal with and you have to, you know, get really good at your craft in order to be able to sell a product that people would be happy with. But either way, I think it needs to bring you joy.
You know, Savannah, I mean, I'd be curious to know. You know, speaking of the pandemic or just general economic changes, right? I mean, one thing that seems to be happening in athletics is their growing concern, right, about child safety. I mean, football is obviously a very different kind of thing, but, you know, we're changing the way that we teach kids to play soccer. We're changing the way we teach kids to play all kinds of sports. I mean, has that impacted the sort of the gymnastics, I mean, industry, for lack of a better word? Do kids come in with a different set of expectations, or maybe kids leaving, you know, contact team sports and coming into your gym because their parents are concerned about, you know, the safety of a kid's long-term health?
So we've actually seen kind of a little bit of everything that you just mentioned there. We have had some students of ours that have been with us for a very long time actually drop out of the gym due to the pandemic, just wanting to take a break and be safe staying at home. And we have absolutely encouraged that, of course, you know, each their own. And we've also had families that have left other sports and decided to come join us because it was, like you said, a little less impact kind of, what they're able to do with us is they are in a classroom setting. However, we do not have physical contact with each other throughout that time. Now, the coach and the student will, of course, that's part of our teaching, but they're not going to, for instance, like football or basketball, where you're on top of each other. We've had a little hiccup there with our cheerleading, of course, because we stunt. And so with stunting, you have four people in a stunt group and you have to physically touch each other. So we've had to make some adjustments, especially early on when the phases were different and the regulations were different as far as safety safety management goes in the facilities. But it's definitely been a journey, to say the least. We've learned to continue to keep our classes going at a safe rate without having to be so physical. So where we might have done before mini spotting stations throughout their 1 hour class, we've kind of minimized that and done more of a skill focus rather than many skills at a time. Again, just to, for the safety of our students, for the safety of our staff, and of course for the safety of everyone else in our facility. So,
yeah, I mean, Melissa, it sounds like you guys kind of have a social element to what you do too. I mean, it makes me think of, you know, shops that we've had here, like with places you can go, you can do, you know, painting in groups with friends and that kind of thing. But I also think, like, look, I mean, crafting is something that often people do by themselves, right? It can be a way of, it's got a meditative property to it. I mean, have, you know, consumer trends or personal behaviors sort of changed what you perceive to be the demand for this kind of thing? I know, obviously, you know, this, I'm sure that the hurricanes and things in Lake Charles have been problematic, but I mean, but outside of that, I mean, has this really changed the way people approach this activity?
Yeah, there is a social aspect to it because creative people like to be around other creative people. So when we do classes, a lot of times they're coming in because they want to learn, you know, advance in their skill. But sometimes it's just to be around other people who have you know, hobbies and interests. So yeah, there is a social aspect to it.
It strikes me like you've got two locations, right? I mean, or you operate in Broussard, you operate in Scott. And neither are terribly big places, but it seems like there's a lot of demand for what you do. I mean, are kids just going gangbusters for gym? I mean, how are you guys doing this to where you need to have two Hang Time TNTs in Lafayette Parish?
So, of course, our original spot that we first started our facility was in Scott. It is, of course, the bigger of the two locations that we have. However, we had an opportunity come up, of course, during the middle of this pandemic. It was a little bit of a risk to take, but my husband and I have always wanted to have a location across town because there is nothing there in Broussard that is an actual recreational trampoline facility. And what I mean by that is they have jump zone, they have elevation station where you can go and play and jump on the trampolines, but to actually get instruction, there was not anything in the market. There are plenty of gymnastics facilities in our area, actually. Probably for such a small area, we have probably one of the most the most places that are offered here in Acadiana. There's probably 8+ facilities. We are two of them. So it was a little bit of a risk to take, but we have done really well out there. It is slowly but surely growing. Of course, we bought the facility in the middle of a pandemic. So it has been very slow moving. But it's been nice to kind of remember when almost, because we're going on year 6 of Hang Time being an organization. And so to remember what it was like that first year where it is slow and it's time consuming and very rewarding when it does grow. So we've been able to offer what we have in Scott is Hang Time TNT Gymnastics. Again, that's our original location. And then the location in Scott is called Hang Time Elite. And that facility specializes in competitive cheer. The facility was big enough to offer that for our families, both Scott location and Broussard. And now we have, since we've gotten the ball rolling, should I say, out there, we have now offered a variety of recreational classes as well. So we have cheerleading recreational classes, tumbling and trampoline and tumbling recreational classes now in Broussard. So it's very similar to what pretty much everything that we offer here in Scott, except for the competitive trampoline and tumbling program. And that's my specialty.
I mean, Melissa, it strikes me, you know, a niche operation, right? The nature of what you're doing would kind of have a small market. And Lake Charles is not a small city. It's not a big city either. I mean, what's the volume of interest for what you guys do in a place like that?
Well, right now, it's down a little bit, but it's really mostly because people aren't in their homes. And so crafting is not a high priority at the moment. We're still doing, doing well right now, but we're starting to get back to it. But for a little while there, it was just people needed us to sew for them or create for them, or they were coming in to do supplies. They weren't really looking to add new skills or learn new things. Most of them still have their craft rooms still in storage or things along those lines. But I do feel like it's coming back around towards that.
Well, I mean, outside the pandemic, I mean, trying to get a sense of like how big is a class size? Are you running them, you know, twice a day? Are people just coming in a couple times a week? I mean, it sounds like the teaching aspect of your business is a big part of it. I mean, is that what drives the revenue? I mean, just trying to get a sense of how that works.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we feel like if we teach people how to do a skill, then they can come back to us for the supplies that they need. So there's sort of a reciprocal. So we're going to teach a man to fish. And so he'll come back and, you know, you still have to continue to get all the supplies that you need for that. So yeah, I definitely do feel like there is an element of that where, that we keep the classes smaller only because when you're teaching a hands-on sort of project, you've got to sort of get in there with people and show them up close how to do that. So with that one instructor or two instructors, 8 to 10 people in a class. But if it's a painting class and people are just sort of having fun and sort of doing their own thing, you know, 20 or 30, depending on the group, or it's a birthday, or people who know each other or don't know each other. But we try to keep it small in the beginning, especially with our newbie classes. So if you are brand new to sewing, I want to keep my class, my sewing class, small because I want to sit next to you at your sewing machine and I want to show you the buttons and I want to make sure you know what you're doing so I can give you a good solid foundation. And then maybe in our upper level classes, we may do a few more people because you know the basics. You're just learning a skill to add on to that. So we can add a few more people in, a little less hands-on. So it just kind of depends on the skill level too.
You know, Savannah, I noticed that, like, you know, seems like group events is also a big part of what you guys do. I mean, how much of that is really part of the business versus the instruction side of it?
So basically the only thing that we do as far as our facility goes that would be considered group would be like birthday parties, or we do summer camps, or camps when school's closed. And we've pretty much, and we're waiting for our camps to really kick off this summer. And we're hoping that everything continues to progress, because like she was mentioning earlier, we were closed down for quite some time at the very beginning of this pandemic. We were closed down for, I think, 4 months. So we're really looking forward to having a successful summer and a summer where we can operate as normal, or as what our close to normal will be. And of course, a lot of our competitive teams, a lot of their events have been canceled because of, you know, the pandemic and people taking precautions. So I see more of it being an issue for our competitive teams. And so we're just hoping that we can, last year, our year was cut short. So we're hoping that we can just fulfill the rest of this season. Our season for trampoline and tumbling will end in July. And for our competitive cheer teams, we're approaching the end mark. Some end in March and some will end in April. So it looks very promising, and we were able to complete a full season. So yeah, we don't really see too much of that with our recreational side. We keep it very small already, 8-1 instructor. And of course, they're not group activities. I mean, there's kids in the class, but they're all able to do their own individual thing while we're able to coach.
I imagine the hardest part for both of you, obviously being people very passionate about teaching and working with people on things that you love, right? It's been hard to be away from that. And I'm glad to hear that, you know, there's a positive outlook for both of you to be able to get back to that. And I'm sure it's really gratifying. Savannah and Melissa, it was great having you both on the show. Thanks for coming on Out to Lunch Acadiana.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My guests on Out to Lunch Acadiana today have been Savannah Vincent Thompson of Hangtime TNT and Melissa Hill of Niche Creative Studio. We edited this show to fit into the time slot here on KRBS. You can hear our unedited conversation and find out more about Melissa and Savannah and what they do by listening to the Out to Lunch Acadiana podcast, which you can find anywhere you get podcasts and on our website, it's acadiana.com. If you want to know what we look like, you can find photos from the show on itsacadiana.com and on our social media. These photos were taken by Jill LaFleur. You can find more of her work at LaFleurPhoto.com. And one of these days, we'll get back to hosting Out to Lunch Acadiana live and in person at the French Press in downtown Lafayette. Until then, however, you can go to the French Press yourself for breakfast or lunch or order it for delivery. Out to Lunch Acadiana is a production of INO Broadcasting for itsacadiana.com and KRBS 88.7 FM. The producer of our show is Grant Morris. Our technical producer is Eric Merle. Our associate producers are Molly Richard and Jane Risher. Our researcher is Maggie Mendel. I'm Christian Mader. I'm editor of The Current, Lafayette's nonprofit source for local news. And to find out more of what matters in Lafayette, head over to thecurrentla.com and sign up for our newsletter. Till then, I'll see you here again next time around our virtual lunch table for more business Acadiana style on Out to Lunch Acadiana. Bye-bye.
Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys and offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. And by Hancock Whitney, with more than 120 years of experience helping clients protect the financial future they deserve, even in these challenging times. Hancock Whitney. Associates, legal recruiters in Louisiana and Texas. Mitchell Foreman wrote and performs all the music on Out to Lunch. You can hear Mitchell's music anywhere great jazz is sold or streamed, and at MitchellForeman.com.
Enjoy Zydeco blues and old school R&B on the Zydeco Stomp, Saturdays from noon to 3, only on KRVS 88.7 FM and online at krvs.org.
On the next Hearts of Space, another journey in the modern Celtic soundscape with music by Anya Minogue, Moya Brennan, Braga Dare, and more. I'm Stephen Hill, a program called The Celtic Road on the next Hearts of Space.
Coming up later tonight at 11 here on KRVS.
From the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, this is KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.